Okay, in the ongoing saga of this incredibly freakish weather in America's heartland, this update today, April 26th, a high of about 44, and it was still snowing. It's really weird. What's up with that? I mean, honestly, it was somewhere over 40, right around 40 or above, and still snowing. It wasn't sticking, but it was still snowing. Anchorage got 17 inches, I heard, 22 inches northeast of Anchorage. For a period of time, they were getting 2 inches an hour of snow on Friday in Anchorage. To the west and to the north of me, they were getting about 10 inches of snow in a storm that would, as I was talking about with Gina on the phones just before the show got started, it would have reminded you of the beginning of the movie Fargo, if you've ever seen it. And that's exactly what it looked like out on the highways. Here in St. Paul, Minnesota, the good twin, we got the dusting of snow that we were expecting. That didn't stop one lone golfer I saw out there today on a public golf course who was driving away using a bright orange ball. And looked pretty good doing it. I guess you'd have to replace the divots. Before we go any further, we've got a good show coming up. Dr. John Abramson is back. We'll be talking about overdosed America and a very scary story about more fixes that are in, and some of these companies. In one case in particular, a pharmaceutical company that appears to have worked out a deal by buying the good name of some doctors and putting it on reports they didn't write for drugs that probably didn't work, and how this may not be as uncommon as you might think, and how that's going to affect your health. We'll tell you more about that and several other recent developments that John Abramson keeps track of in his book and his work, Overdosed America, and then we'll do open lines coming up this hour. But before we go any further, I want to go back to last Saturday. Some of you may have heard me talk about this last night on Coast to Coast. And I offered an apology for being so adversarial. Sometimes that's needed and appreciated. But last Saturday, I was wrong to stand my ground so strongly, even if I passionately disagreed with the direction that the show was going. And I did. It's a little complicated. I went into some of it last night on Coast to Coast. I just happened to mention that a letter I got has always stayed with me from somebody. I even had read part of it on the air, I think on the old Coast to Coast Live, where they had written to say that after listening to a guest that was particularly doomy and gloomy, they wanted to commit suicide and asked me to talk them out of it, asked me to offer them some hope. And they were quite serious, although I didn't play it that way quite on the air when I read it. When I wrote back to them, I wrote back at length, and it just always stayed with me, and I always sort of made a promise to always offer some hope whenever we're talking about something that's particularly scary, like our collapsing economies or something. Anyway, regardless of how I felt or how much I wanted to do that, Steve Quayle deserved a better host than I was last Saturday. So for those of you who wrote to say that you expected more of me, you were correct. Steve Quayle was correct when he said that there was some miscommunication about his expectation on the show, and that was totally fair. And I think it's pretty clear what was hooking me on that and why I kept separating out his belief from mine, but I don't want that to overshadow my apology. Earlier this week, I invited Steve back on with a promise that we'd play it any way he wanted to, and I hope he takes me up on that. So again, while I'm apologizing to Steve, let me throw in all of my colleagues here, including George, who had to hear so much about it from a few of you out there. And for those whose enjoyment of the show, whose enjoyment of the show was ruined by my inner conflict, I hope you accept my apology too. and I hope these words help. Some time for crypto news before we get to open lines. I'll lay it out simply for you. Pirates, ghosts, monster chickens, and Nazis still on the attack. You cannot ask for more than that from crypto news. And then we'll do open lines this hour on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Looking forward to open lines coming up a little bit later on this hour. Then we'll roll that out for the rest of the hour. Did you all hear last night's show, though, where we were talking with reporter Christy Peel from Five Eyewitness News? And I know, yeah, you're thinking to yourself, oh, my God, not another thing about Minnesota or something. But it just happens to be the center of this investigation that really starts in New York with two New York police detectives who have retired from the force, who began to look into what seemed like and what had been ruled the accidental drowning of a Fordham University student. And the case gets connected to a series of what had been ruled accidental drownings throughout the upper third of the country, starting in New York and going all the way out to Washington. And whether it's a satanic cult, whether it is just some sort of sick group out there, whether it's connected on the internet, whether it's just some sort of weird underground thing that we don't even have a name for because we've never really seen it before, we just don't know yet. But what we do know is, and the story was pretty clear last night, we talked about it for several hours, is that there is a group that is now for the first time being referred to as the Smiley Face Serial Killers. And this group, which is alleged to be so organized as to have a hierarchy, this group appears to be responsible for the deaths of as many as 100, more likely somewhere in the area of 18 to 40, but leaving open the possibility that it may be as much as 100, sort of good-looking, all-American college boys or young men, kind of all around the same body type and age, who have been abducted walking home from bars or from parties. They were always walking home alone. The last time their friends saw them, they were drunker than they usually were, or drunk for the first time or whatever, and they were going off into the dark. And the next thing people know, they show up weeks and or months later in a river. And they'd all been treated as drownings when, in fact, if you treated them like crime scene, like these two New York police detectives did, and you went back to where the body went into the water as opposed to where it was found, what they discovered was spray-painted smiley faces and other spray-painted tagging at those crime scenes, which the police who were investigating the drownings never looked for, not until these two cops began to tie them all together. It's a fascinating story. And the link is still there at coasttocoastam.com. You can go to the link and you can watch the original news story. And I encourage you strongly to do that, because you're going to see a lot more, hear a lot more about this story starting next week. The cops have been trying to work with local authorities, trying to get them to reopen the investigation, trying to get the FBI involved, but nobody seems to budge yet on the fact that all of these kids, all these guys, just happened to do the same thing in the exact same way, in some cases, one a week. But they're hoping that with this public pressure, they're going to reverse that and use their investigative powers to help try to bring some of these victims some justice. And we'll talk more about that in the weeks ahead. Just be listening to hear more from the Smiley Face Serial Killers. And you heard it first here on Coast to Coast AM across the country. And take a look online at coasttocoastam.com and link up to that story and watch it and read more about it in the files that are there at that link. This week, there was news, too, that Merck & Company conducted research on its own drugs and paid prominent scientists to lend their names to the studies. Researchers and ethicists say scientists are often paid to be listed as authors of ghost-written studies in scientific journals, a practice they say undermines the public's already sagging confidence in research. Merck didn't disclose the involvement of ghostwriters, according to the articles, which were based on company documents that surfaced in the Vioxx lawsuits. We'll talk more about that coming up next hour with Dr. John Abramson. Looking forward to your calls and open lines after crypto news. Next, in Spain, CNN reports the crew of a Spanish fishing boat seized by pirates last week off the coast of Somalia has been freed. The boat was being escorted to the Seychelles. Maria Teresa Fernandez de la Vega, the deputy prime minister of Spain, said in a news conference that all 26 crew members of the fishing vessel have been brought to safety. Take that, most dangerous catch. I don't think they've had pirates yet on that show. Cool show, but so far, no tuna pirates yet. Tiny particles called nanobacteria have been intriguing researchers in many ways since their discovery 20 years ago. Perhaps the most controversial question they pose is whether or not nanobacteria are alive. Sometimes called nanobes, nanobacteria don't seem to fit scientists' criteria for life. Researchers at a workshop hosted by the National Academy of Sciences for this very specific reason concluded that the minimal cellular size of life on Earth must exceed 200 nanometers in diameter in order to contain the cellular machinery based on DNA replication. But nanobacteria can be as small as 80 nanometers, right? I just want to share, I don't often use that term. I think 80 nanometers, not nanomonitors. Anyway, so far, the scientists are sticking with their thoughts that they cannot contain life. What's your bet? That nanobes are dead, or that research scientists will be issuing a new press release correcting their previous stance about 6 months from now? I'm going with the latter, but the past is always prologue for me. On the Coast to Coast website, there's a link to a story by Maggie Riopel. It's about a particular historical museum where there had been some ghost activity. The Niagara Area Paranormal Society went in to investigate. On April 5th, six members of a paranormal team went to the Welland Historical Museum to hunt for ghosts with a slew of equipment like digital recorders, infrared cameras, electromagnetic field meters, infrared thermometers, and laptops. Quote, "We had some personal experiences," said investigator Carol Taylor. "We didn't capture it on video, unfortunately." But at the Coast to Coast website, there is a weird photograph that captures something. A dead hawk that had captured another bird. Have you seen this photo yet? It's going around the internet. A hawk that was found dead along a California highway with the claw of a songbird protruding from its chest. It appeared to be that the songbird, after having been eaten, fought inside of the bird and cut its way out of the hawk. It's not clear if it's a partially digested meal, just something happened, or whether it was a kickback from this songbird that was eaten. Go take a look at it yourself. You can see it at coasttocoastam.com. The photograph of a hawk capturing a songbird that may have killed the hawk after he was eaten. Hard to tell who's capturing whom, the hawk or Tweety Bird Rex fighting back. Oh, and speaking of giant killer prehistoric birds, welcome to Jurassic Beak. The argument may be settled once and for all. A story by Michael Howey. The mighty T-Rex has even more in common with the humble chicken than previously thought. Scientific study of ancient proteins dating back 68 million years suggests that chickens could, in fact, be direct descendants of the king of dinosaurs. Scientists analyzed the structure of tiny shreds of protein extracted from a fossilized T-Rex bone. You've heard about this. Researchers from Harvard University analyzed molecules from a shred of T-Rex protein along with that of 21 modern species of chickens to find their evolutionary links. Their findings indicated that the giant beasts, which reigned the Earth for more than 100 million years, share common ancestry with chickens. Scientists found that at a molecular level, T-Rex was much more like chickens than alligators and lizards were like T-Rexes. The only difference is that if T-Rexes hadn't evolved into chickens, Colonel Sanders would have needed much bigger buckets. I don't even know what that means, really, but I just couldn't resist. Finally, Royal Navy divers spent a fourth day looking in vain for a huge Second World War Luftwaffe bomb. After losing it on the seabed, the German bomb, weighing at about a half a ton, washed up on an English beach by heavy seas on Monday, was taken out to sea by naval experts to be detonated once and for all when it was lost again over the side of the ship by the Navy. So if you should happen to be sailing off the coast of England and you come across this old German ordnance, the British Navy would like it back. If you should happen to come across this old German bomb and it blows up your ship, the British Navy would like you to know that wasn't the one they lost. They look forward to an update. I look forward to open lines whenever we can do them. Got a couple of standing by right now. East of the Rockies, Brian is in Omaha, Nebraska, on Coast to Coast AM to get us started. Brian?
Hi, Ian. Thank you for taking my call. I need to give a huge thanks to you for getting me through last November to the 11th of this month. I became a nocturnal person due to the environment that I was thrown into, a group home for mentally ill people during this 5 month period.
How did that happen, Brian?
Well, the lifestyle that I led kind of exploded and I self-destructed, and it brought me to that place. And I finally made it out of there on the 11th of this month. And everybody there was pretty low functioning, and I'm high functioning for having an illness.
Right.
What
are you categorized as? How are you diagnosed?
At first, for like 7 years, I was first diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia.
Right.
And seeing a new psych doctor and a therapist, they said I'm not schizophrenic, but they said that now I'm just bipolar and hypo anxiety.
You know who's experienced that parallels exactly?
Yes, I did that. And
you know whose experience that is? That's Mark Vonnegut.
Mark Vonnegut. Who is that?
That's Dr. Mark Vonnegut. He's Kurt Vonnegut, the author. Ever heard of him?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Mark Vonnegut was his son, who's now a Harvard trained pediatrician.
Okay.
And Mark Vonnegut even wrote a whole book about it. He was originally diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic, was treated as that. Now, sometime later, after going through a series of things, he has discovered that actually he's bipolar, and that the symptoms were very close to each other, and that's why doctors got it wrong for all those years.
Okay, I need to thank you guys, George, Art, and Somewhere in Time with Art, and when he came back, and you for getting me through this entire time, because
good.
I shared a room with two other people in another person and that kind of stuff, and everybody was nocturnal there. I mean, they would drink coffee and smoke cigarettes. It was part of their illness,
right?
You know, and that kind of stuff. And
right.
it's just the way that those people are, and I am, and I've been a long time listener to the program too, and that kind of stuff. And I owe you guys a big thanks for pulling me through that time.
Well, I think George did the heavy lifting there, but glad to help out in any way I can. And Brian, what? Tell me about your new life real fast. You're out of that group home. You have a place of your own now.
Yes, I'm sharing an apartment with an older man, and it's like heaven compared to what I was there.
Okay.
The group home was like considered comparable to like a crack house.
Oh,
I've never
man.
Been in a crack house, but I've had visitors say that. You know, this was just, you know, terrible, you know, that kind of stuff.
It wasn't a healing environment.
No, not for me. It didn't work for me.
Right.
It did not work for me. So,
Brian, glad you're out, and glad that in any way that we could be a conversation partner for you for all those lonely times in there, that you had somebody to talk to on the radio. Glad it could be us, and thank you. And I'll pass along those thoughts to George and to Art next time I talk with them. Tom, Dave, other people hanging on right now. If you go to Open Lines, we'll give you the numbers coming up in just a second. Where are you going to take us for the rest of this half hour? It could be on any of the topics we've already touched on for crypto news, or it can be an entirely new direction. Do I have time here to take Tom? Not enough time. Okay, but then I'll get Tom coming up right after the break. So if you just hang on, we'll get back to it on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. And I hope you take advantage of this. Love Open Lines. Loved doing it the last couple of hours last night, although it continued the thread for quite some time into the evening, discussing the missing clues that you might have in your own life or in your own experience that might explain the smiley face serial killers that were the subject of the first couple of hours of last night's show. And if you haven't seen it yet, you ought to click onto the website, coasttocoastam.com, and go back and look at that story. Try and figure out whether or not you have anything that you can add to that, as investigators are still putting it together. That having been said, where are you going to take us? We'll find out next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Coming up, Dr. John Abramson after the top of the hour. Overdosed America is his book, but it's also his ongoing mission to find out how America is getting doped up, or rather how we're not getting the straight dope anyway on the dope they're trying to give us. And we'll talk about these new drug studies that weren't, these ghost-written drug reviews that were written under the name of some prominent and influential scientists that merely sold their name so that it could endorse an article actually written by the drug companies themselves. How might this have affected you? And what are some of the other examples? We'll get to that coming up with Dr. John Abramson next hour on Coast to Coast AM. Back to Tom, where we left it in Michigan on Coast to Coast for Open Lines for the rest of this hour. Tom, where are you going to take us?
Yeah, I have had a recurring problem throughout my whole life.
I'm listening.
Yeah, I seem to have problems where there's always people in my life that I don't like, and they never seem to move away or leave me alone.
Don't we call those relatives?
Yeah, relatives. I've had a couple of those. I've had a person that was mentally challenged that couldn't figure out that I didn't want to be his friend and called my house for years and years and years. And at the same time, I had trouble attracting, loving, caring mate. And
what do you think the pattern indicates to you?
I don't know, but it's very frustrating. I have a lot of friends that seem to, move away. Relatives that I like have died. And the people
and the ones you don't like are thriving.
Oh yeah. And the ones I don't like, of course they're the ones that live, real close to me, and my sister, who I actually do like, she moved to New York, and it's like, damn.
Right. Well, so could it be that you miss the ones that aren't there, and the ones that are there you just don't care for? Or do you think there's some other cosmic plan at work that keeps you surrounded by people you don't like?
I have no idea. I've been really trying to change my life for the better in the last year, and I've lost three jobs.
How'd you lose three jobs?
The first job,
Well, you don't have to get too specific, but I mean, is there a pattern to the job loss?
Basically, one, I was too slow, and then the other two, they thought I was incompetent.
I
had never lost a job before, this year. And my mother, passed away, and my dad, who I'd finally gotten some space from, invited himself back into my life and was even more pushy and nasty. And it's just like...
Well, have you ever done this, Tom? Have you ever spent any time in therapy?
I've been in counseling for like 7 years.
Yeah, because that'll often help to locate those patterns, of what is affecting you. But, and Tom, this is an interesting situation. I'll have to think on a little bit. Maybe other people will resonate with that. I wish you the best of luck in your challenge. Like does attract like, though. So maybe when you're trying to attract a positive, sunnier people, you might want to take a look on whether or not you're being that too. And maybe in adjusting who you are, you'll adjust who you attract to you. And I do believe we create our own orbits in a way. West of the Rockies, Dave is in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Dave.
Hi. How are you doing?
Hi. Good. Where are you going to take us?
Well, first of all, I'm a relative, and I don't know whether he knows it or not, of Richard C. But anyway.
Are you really? Of Hoagland?
Yep.
How are you related to RCH?
I think we're related because the family is pretty well. It's all descended from a Dutch immigrant in New Amsterdam in 1643.
Oh, darn.
And you could either be in the central line of it in Jersey, as I am, or you could be in the western line, as he probably is. And Hoagie Carmichael, which mother's name was Hoagland, he's a Hoagland. But anyway.
Wait. I wonder if Richard C. Hoagland knows he's related to Hoagie Carmichael, the famous songwriter.
Indiana line. There were originally three lines as the country grew west.
But isn't that perfect, though? Every time we should talk to Richard C. Hoagland, we should use as his intro piece of music, Oh, Buttermilk Sky, or something like that, since that's what he...
I go as Colonel Dave whenever I talk to talk shows in Tucson, because I was in the Army for 30 years in the Pentagon and all over the world. But anyway, what I wanted to tell you about was Cincinnati last night.
Yeah, and just for people that didn't catch it, that was the only other word that the two New York police detectives investigating these smiley face serial killers released, and that was spray painted at a crime scene in Michigan, Cincinnati, which then they discovered when they were looking into a similar crime scene in Dubuque.
Correct.
They followed the bloodhound trail down to the water where it appeared to be the site where the body went into the Mississippi, and when they got down there, they looked up, and right there, they were at the intersection of 6th Avenue and Cincinnati Avenue.
Exactly, and here's the connection.
Okay.
I think they were bragging up there in Michigan by using that to confound people, but to also brag about some place they'd been before. And the place was Dubuque, because it's not Cincinnati. You can tell her to tell the cops this. It's Cincinnati.
I've heard that from somebody else mentioned that last night in open lines.
Cincinnati is the Mound, as it was called. It's a girls' Catholic girls' school. My wife attended, and I met her when she was 18 years old and had been in high school and had then recently graduated. But
Dubuque, that was
the Dominican nuns up there. It's still there. It's a beautiful place, and if you're ever there, you should visit it because it's got the most beautiful chapel in the world. But it is no longer a school for girls. It's really a home for retired nuns. But that's where they got...
Interesting.
Cincinnati is on that street sign when they dumped the body in Dubuque.
Cincinnati. I will pass that along to
the
reporter.
And then they brag by putting it up in Michigan and showing a connection.
Well, I think this is why, and thank you, Dave, Colonel Dave, I think this is why the investigators... believe that there is a competition between these groups as part of these smiley face serial killer groups. And again, you can link up to this through our website and take a look at this developing story. It appears to be kind of something they've never run into before, or at least things that have been alleged but never been proven. So similar to what Geraldo Rivera said was out there, but they never were able to really ever show was really happening. And that's some sort of cult-like killing groups that were tagging their crime scenes and keeping a tally. It could be a gang. It could be somebody, this is part of their initiation, and every one of these murders accounts for another person initiated into the gang. We just don't know. But thank you for that little bit of information more. It really is an amazing story. Let's go to Kevin. He's in Providence on Coast to Coast AM for Open Lines. Kevin, where are you going to take us?
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Good. You?
Yeah, not too bad. Well, I don't know. I mean, I had a couple of things in my mind, but obviously I'd be impressed with time with the new hour coming up. But it's just curious. I've worked for public safety for 15 years and dealing with the gangs and having to deal with 911 calls and dispatching for the police department. And it definitely sounded like it's a gang situation. The problem is it just never seems to be a short of any stupid people in the world.
Right.
The youth is out of control. They have way too much time on their hands. Drugs is the drug situation is just not going anywhere. I mean, it's still as poignant as it is today as it was 15 years ago.
Well, and I've heard that for all of the kids who may not be doing, the illegal drugs, and there's been a drop in, a certain amount of illegal drug usage, there's all these legal drugs that kids are on, and these things that are being prescribed to them. And so maybe that's one of the reasons why, illegal drugs have gone down, is the amount of prescriptions for legals are up.
Well, it's kind of funny because not too long ago, there was a commercial on TV I seen. It was a kid. He's like sitting in the cafeteria, and he pops open a little Altoid box and talking about all these pills that he has. And
right, takes them from got them from his mom's medicine cabinet or something, right?
Yeah, and it's just, I just don't know where the parenting is today. Where's the common sense, the logic, the reasoning between raising kids and just keeping an eye on them and even protecting yourself by putting things away in certain places where they can't get at them?
Maybe that'll be the upside to these difficult economic times, where there might be fewer people working, that maybe more people will be at home, and some of these things will start getting addressed. It is a good question. It brings us back to Overdosed America coming up after the top of the hour with Dr. John Abramson on the way. And first-time caller line, Ron is in Pennsylvania on Coast to Coast AM. Ron, where are you going to take us?
I'm going to take you back to yesterday.
Okay.
Long-time listener, back to the Dreamland days, and I've had a lot of bleary eyes listening to you.
Glad to have you.
Okay, I'm a former police officer. And,
yes, sir.
Several months ago, my cousin's son drowned in Ocean City, Maryland. We don't know where he went into the water, but last night during two of the callers' discussions, a lot of red flags went up. What happened, I'll try to be very simple about this. I will withhold some details, of course. If anybody wants to get a hold of me, we can discuss this at another time. My cousin and her husband rent a timeshare in Ocean City, Maryland, and occasionally they go there for vacation. They took their son with them, name undisclosed, who's 31 years of age. Now, he did a little bit of surfing, so he was in reasonably good condition. Unemployed, had a minor criminal record with some drugs and so forth. But as one of the callers reflected yesterday, the family, the father, the mother, and the son, had run afoul of some Satanists in Western Maryland where they lived. Now, knowing I was former policeman, his mother calls me up and asked me what to do, and the advice I gave her, which I too long to go into, worked. They kept the Satanists at bay, but those people will go to the ends of the earth to follow somebody. They are nuts.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, that's very interesting. And if there's this pattern, it may fit in there. The most interesting part about this particular investigation, and I know you're alluding to your knowledge of this, is that all of the victims in these smiley face serial killer crimes were all within a few inches of each other in height and right around the exact same year. They were all college students, and they all fit a similar profile in terms of what type of student they were. And so it really seemed like they were being targeted at random for a crime of opportunity, but they were focused on getting a particular type of victim. Now, that it's interesting that you're talking about that being the byproduct of a satanic, you're saying a satanic group. Well, I mean that it could happen. That would change the scope of the investigation if they can start showing that this is a way they have discovered, that some people have discovered, for murdering people and getting away with it and making it be a crime that nobody investigates as a crime.
Well, there's more to it than that, and I'll bring up some details very quickly. He's about 5'6", 5'8", fairly good condition. He does not look his age of 31. Now, what if there's more than one group out there?
Oh, that's what they're saying. It could
I checked with the Ocean City Police Department and talked to the lead detective on the case, and the condition the body was found was not good. Now, the Leighton Prince revealed that he did have a minor criminal record, so that's how they identified him. And there was no signs of trauma that they could see on the body, but the body was in bad condition. And essentially, he just leaves the timeshare a half hour before checkout, goes down the street, disappears. Nobody sees him, broad daylight. We think he went into the ocean somewhere. Nobody saw the body. Nobody saw anything, just like he vanished.
Right.
About 3 days later, he shows up on a beach at somewhere in Delaware, and one thing led to another, and they identified the body and so forth. Now, whether the lead detective, who is from this area, by the way, we talked cop shop for a while here, did not reveal any details would not surprise me, because even though crimes may be very, very similar, it doesn't mean they're the same, and he doesn't know who he's talking to on the phone.
Right. Well, so, I totally get that. And I think, you know what I'm going to ask you to do, Ron, because I know you have more details on that. I want you to go follow the link at coasttocoastam.com. Because I don't think any of the reporters that are following the story are listening. But if you take that extra step to go to the website, there's an email link once you click onto that story about these smiley face serial killers. And you can click onto that and you can send that information to the reporter. I think they would want to know more about it. I think last night was a good indication. There seems to be a very strong national pattern to this. Now, it's true that some people just get drunk and they fall in rivers. It happens. And what percentage of the victims here in this case that's being profiled were just accidental drownings? We don't know. But it is remarkable that there's a smiley face spray painted at the scene of where these guys are going into the water. And that they're all classified as accidental drownings, so they're never investigated as murders, and a lot of the evidence is lost. Melody's on the wildcard line on Coast to Coast AM and the time we have remaining before the top of the hour. Melody?
Howdy. Hi. Calling from Elvis City.
Hey, y'all.
Health of Elvis Presley.
Glad to have you.
Yeah, I've been enjoying your show since I was 16 years old. And I'm almost 20 now, so I've been listening for a while.
You sure have.
I had a question. Have you heard about the new movie? It's going to be talking about the killer bees. You know, y'all be talking about the missing bees. They're going to have a storyline of how people are going to react to missing bees.
You're talking about Linda Moulton Howe when she was on the other night, talking about another round of bee concerns?
Yeah, that's going to be a movie. I saw the ad about it tonight when I went to the news. I saw that.
Right.
I heard about that.
I saw the headline for it, but I didn't know that they'd made it, that was what they were talking about, so thank you.
Yeah, so I was wondering if y'all heard about it. You know about the earthquake that happened, I forget what state, in Illinois?
Yes.
That just happened? Well, I'm from Tipola, and some people felt it from other towns near us. It happened, some people felt it in the town I grew up in. I'm like, wow.
Sure, well... Yeah, well, that's because it's the New Madrid fault line, and the New Madrid runs right down into Mississippi. So not a total surprise that you would feel it, because it affected that whole area the very first time that it ever broke. Damon in Utah, and then I think we're done with open lines for this half hour, and I'll have to wait till next week or when George can get around to it. Hey, Damon?
Yes.
Enjoyed talking to about a million people in Utah last Sunday night when we were talking with the woman who was part of a former polygamist cult. I'd never spoken to so many people from Utah in one night as that night, but every other caller. But you got a second here. Where you want to take us real quick?
Well, I was just wondering what your take is on the Gospel of Thomas.
Love it.
I
love it.
It's just recently uncovered, and it was never canonized.
Here's the thumbnail real quick. First of all, it's been around for about 50 or 60 years. We know it had been referenced, but we didn't have an extant, vibrant copy that we do now. And the Gospel of Thomas was never included in the canon because it doesn't have a narrative. It's a collection of wisdom sayings. And so it's not quite like the other Gospels, and a lot of the sayings in Thomas are in some of the other Gospels. But it's a fascinating book, and I love, you can pick up some great research on the Gospel of Thomas. It's a terrific read, very interesting take on Jesus out of that. Okay, Dr. John Abramson coming up next on Coast to Coast AM.